Yo, welcome to the Zillionaires Podcast, where we mainly talk about Seattle-related sports topics and other things as well. I'm your host and moderator, Solo, from Brooklyn.
What up, y'all? This is Chisler from Seattle, Washington. They call me the Wizard of Washington Sports. That means every night I gaze into my crystal ball so I can tell you the future of what's going down.
What's up, guys? This is Krusty from Yakima. I wear my fandom on my sleeve. I get crazy, I get emotional, and I like to throw down ultimatums. Let's have some fun.
All right, well, this is episode 3 of the Zillionaires Podcast. I have to say, I'm a little shocked that we've made it to 3. considering
we barely made it to 3, dude. Let's be honest. We've had a little bit of infighting. We've had a little bit of words, a little bickering, a little egos needed massaging. Yeah,
on one person.
wait.
A little bit of stupidity, a little bit of mistakes.
I mean, oh, that's true.
We've really gone around the horn in 2 episodes.
The second one, I was a little loose, but that's okay. It was Sunday afternoon. I was out celebrating the beautiful sunny day and hit a couple of bars. And next thing you know, it was like 8 o'clock, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, I don't even know if I can do this." But anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm being a little bit quieter tonight, a little more composed. I want to act like I'm actually professional for one second.
Did this just turn into a grown-up podcast? Because I
quit. I know. It's so whack now, right?
Well, I'll give the listeners a little update here. I have posted episode 1 and episode 2 on internetzillionaire.com. And we are the podcast Zillionaires. And so you can go up there and download the files. You can listen to them. And this means we have also got an RSS feed. So you can pay attention for new episodes. And we'll be submitting these on iTunes. So get ready.
Nice. This next episode is sponsored by Kombucha. Yeah.
I will say, though, I think it's been long enough. We're older now. I think we might need to change our name from Podcast Zillionaire to Podcast Gazillionaire, because we've got more money in the bank than we ever did back then.
Oh, man. I'm just bawling out of control these days.
We're the gazillionaires now.
It's all relative, my friends. Some of us do, maybe. Some of us do.
Pile it all together, split it 3 ways.
If we pile all of our money, including all of our wives and girlfriends...
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you have girlfriends on top of your wives. I have a fiance, I guess. It's not a girlfriend anymore. Let's put all that money together, and we're gazillionaires, is what you're trying to say.
Well, what's more than a zillion? That's also an interesting question, but maybe not a funny one.
A zillion plus one.
Well, yeah. He's getting deep on us.
It's a made-up number. What's bigger than a made-up number? Yeah.
a zillionaire plus zillionaire.
That's what I was thinking. Anyway. You just add a guh and you've got a gazillion now. And
let's do it.
I see
gazillion all the time, actually. well,
thank
anyway.
You, too. Since I do nothing but blab on this thing, thank you both for your technical savvy. It's cool to see this up and running. Let's get into it.
Yeah. We've discussed this topic, or what we wanted to discuss, and we came up with, let's talk about our favorite Seahawks player of all times. Chisler, I want to start with you.
Oh, boy. This is an opus, and it's an opus to a good, good man and a good player. And I think I'm going to say right now, Richard Sherman is my current favorite Seahawk.
Playing Seahawk.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. And also, I mean, right now he's currently a Seahawk, and tomorrow he could not be.
Yeah, but is he currently your favorite player ever, or he's just currently your favorite player playing?
He is my favorite player all time, and also for Seahawks all time, and also he happens to be playing right now. And
you
I'm going to
elaborate
it down,
on that?
I'm going to break it down in a few different ways, right? First off, you know, we all kind of saw him dominate on the field, and we all, you know, just instantly fell in love with him because he saved so many games in the last second with his play crucial games, clutch player, all that stuff on the field. He lays it out, right? Game in, game out, no matter what. The fact that he's on the sideline getting hyped up and getting maybe even pissed off at his teammates is because he holds everybody to a high standard, the same standard that he holds himself to. So he's just flat out legit on the field, plays his ass off, and has some swagger about it. So all that is to say, that's truly why we all fell in love with Richard Sherman. What happened after the fact was we found out about Richard Sherman, the player, the human being, the father now, all these other facets of him. And I feel like he's the true 360-degree multimedia, socially aware player out there right now. He's the absolute realist guy from top to bottom. And that's because he'll show you the good stuff and he'll show you the bad stuff. And it's not even bad. It's just like the real stuff, right? He shows you the real stuff and can cut through some of the BS too. All of that makes me totally think he's... why he's my favorite is boiled down to one simple fact. I think he's the player who will do the most to change the league over the next 15 years through his... players union work and through his media work. Just he's that savvy. He will change the game. He will turn football into a better sport for the players specifically, I think, in the next 15 years, and maybe even be one of the key reasons that football survives, that professional football survives or thrives, let's say, because it modernizes with the nurturing and the kind of keen eye that he'll put towards the sport and making it evolve in the right ways. So that's like a lot. That's a lot, but like that's a little bit of a deeper message that I wanted to kind of express is that I really feel like he is the one player right now who I see potential to change the game. Will he do it? I don't know. Will the big powers that be able to stuff him back into his box? Who knows? Will he get frustrated? Who knows? But he has the potential to evolve the game in the right way for the fans and the players, I think.
He is very vocal off the field as well as on. I do agree with the fact that he wants to make changes to the NFL, the rules. He's always very vocal on Thursday Night Football. He brings that up every year.
And he's still hammering that one, and it's nobody else is doing it. I don't know if you all know, but that deal went from a $10 million deal for Twitter to broadcast the games live to a $50 million deal for Amazon in 1 year to broadcast Thursday night games live.
Oh my gosh.
So it's like, I was hoping it was going to die, but instead it became five times more lucrative for the NFL in one season.
Yeah. Wow. They're not going anywhere. Plus they made that uniform color rush thing happen, which was just more money, more sales. Yep.
Exactly. Now, it's a total gimmick.
Let me jump in here on, before I get to mine, this brings up something that I think we should address. And that is, in the first episode, Solo actually tried to get us onto the Sherman trade talk, and we kind of jumped away from it and never really got to it. So based on that, why don't we talk about that? But also, Chisler and Solo, you got to back me up here. I'm a little caught off guard by this because I have seen many a text from the Chiz saying that Sherman was wrong for a lot of how he's acting right now. And I feel like you had a lot of negativity towards Sherm recently. Is that not accurate?
I feel like he's going to come to regret this because at the end of the day, there's no better platform in the NFL than the Seattle Seahawks for communicating and for being an example, a beacon of change or of more enlightened thinking. There's not a better example. To say that the Hawks are perfect is totally beyond, it's not true. I'm not trying to say that. But I am saying that they're the best platform that exists right now in the NFL for being a free thinker, for being able to kind of have some media time for your own ideas. Like, I feel like it's the most supported at the Hawks.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. But my...
The hate is that I think he's, you know, he's going to come to regret this idea that he's going to have a better platform somewhere else or a better experience. You know, I feel like it's just the NFL is grading on him and he doesn't realize that and he thinks it's the Hawks.
So, and my perspective is more on the field. So my perspective is this. I don't know where he thinks he's going to go with his style of play and win more than there.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, there isn't a team with which he is going to be as successful going forward as the Hawks. We've seen that with everyone that has left the Hawks. There isn't one player that has left and gotten better than when he was in that defense.
Yeah.
And I think he's smart. He knows that. But this trade situation, so I happened to listen to the pre-draft John Schneider press conference this week, which was really interesting and weird, and this could tie into some fun conspiracy stuff that you love so much.
You love to bring up that conspiracy.
There were two chairs at the table for the press conference, and it was supposed to be Pete and John both doing that press conference, and at the last minute, they pulled away one chair, and John did it by himself. Now, none of the media, and I know how much you love them, none of the local media asked him why Pete wasn't there or anything like that.
Shocker.
But they did dive into the Sherman stuff quite a bit with him. And John, more than I've heard him so far, kind of really just wishy-washed and played both sides of the fences. He went on a long talk about how they have a great open relationship. They talk to each other wonderfully and that he thinks it's over and done with. And that they're just ready to move on from the whole process. But then a guy asked him later, said, just to clarify, are you saying that the Sherman trade talk is over and that you're moving on, he's on the team? And Schneider did say that essentially, like, yes, that's our goal. We're moving on. We've got to focus. But if a team comes in with some sort of giant offer, we, of course, have to listen.
Yeah.
That's our job, to listen. Now, there's been some debate in the local sports radio media and some of that kind of stuff this week after that of whether, you know, is he fishing with that? Is he kind of throwing it out there saying, like, look, come give me a big offer and I'll give you this guy? Or is that more of a wrap up, but he can't honestly, you know, he's being honest. Like, they're always going to listen to anything on any player. You know what I mean? Like,
Why wasn't Pete there?
That's the interesting thing is that maybe Pete and him didn't see eye to eye on something that they went over. I don't know. It was interesting. So, but I guess let's do this. Starting with Solo, do you think Sherman plays this whole next year? Does he get traded? What do you think?
Well, I think I was the first one to bring that up because I was watching, you know, the experts at PTI, which you disagree with.
Oh, God, PTI.
This is the first time I saw it. It was like 2 weeks ago.
I was reading field goals.
Yeah, exactly. I was just, you know, I was in a hotel room somewhere in the Midwest, or I don't remember, and I was just laying on my bed, and I had SportsCenter on in the background. I was barely paying attention to it, and I look up, and they're like, will Sherman get traded? And I was like, whoa. And I just texted you guys, what's up with the Sherman trade? Just had no idea. And you were like, oh, it's all BS.
Yeah, we got caught with our pants down on those.
Yeah, but then, like, 2 days later, you were like, real. Oh, wait a minute.
No, they actually are talking.
So, I mean, you know, I think a lot of it is BS. It is probably a lot of talk. And either way, it's definitely, like, I don't think you talk about trading, saying you're open to a trade. I know, Krusty, you say that they always say that. But I don't think they'd ever say, yeah, well, you know, we're up to trading Russell Wilson anytime. Just what do you got to offer? I don't think they'd ever say that. I mean, no. I don't think that would ever be on the table.
It's here's the weirdest part of this whole thing to feed the conspiracy side of it, Chisler. They made a big point on sports radio, which is where I caught it. That's why I keep bringing it up. That's just where I heard the press conference aired. But they said that they always do a pre-draft press release, but it's always not filmed. It's just for the beat guys, the guys who cover the team for the local papers, and that's it. This one they opened up to all media and allowed it to be filmed and broadcast live. They've never done that before. And then Pete's not there.
Oh, I see. Okay. And then there's a big worm on the hook.
They wanted to communicate. They wanted that stuff out. You know what I mean? Because otherwise, why do that? And it was going to get put out anyway, because the guys that they would have said are just going to write their articles and it would have all been out tomorrow or whatever, or the next day. But they wanted, like, you know, they wanted immediate discussion about this. So that's the interesting piece to me, is like, they're just broadcasting that they still will take a big offer. I don't know. My position, as you guys know, is that from the start, and like Solo said, I've said that I thought it was kind of BS, is not that they're, that it's not real that maybe they're talking about trades. I just think that no team will offer them enough to do it. I don't think anyone's going to give up enough for you to trade the one of the best corners in the NFL.
I think you're correct on that. I mean, I think at this point, it would be a tough move for any team to try to, like, just get a cornerback that's going to want a ton. I mean, well, actually, let's think about it, though. What teams out there need a good cornerback?
They got to be teams that have enough money. I mean, there's teams like you put him on the Atlanta Falcons and they win the Super Bowl. But, you know, that team doesn't have the money to invest in him, I don't think, on their defense. So the only teams that are going to be able to afford it are bad teams. And bad teams don't have anything worth offering to us except for high picks. And I just don't think a team's going to give up enough high picks to get it.
Well, the way I look at it is, you know, Richard's 29. He's looking to go to a competing team, I'm sure. And a team that is going to take on his salary has to be on the precipice of what they feel like is greatness, you know, or a Super Bowl contender. You would not take on a Richard Sherman unless he was the last piece that you, his money, his contract, unless you thought he was the last piece to get you there. Sure, he's got a few years in him, but I'm thinking you're in a run right now. So, like, the Falcons, in fact, would be a great, you know, place for him to land if they had the cap room, but who knows?
There's also teams like the Jets that just are stupid and make, like, way too big of investments in defensive players all the time. Like, I could see it being someone like that that just are dumb with their money. You know what I mean?
Do you think at this point he'd be down to move just for the money, or is he to make a point?
Well, no, I don't think he wants to leave. I don't think it would be for the money at all. I agree with Chisler. I really like Richard Sherman the play. I think if this trade truly happens, it is some sort of just philosophical divide with him and Pete and John that they just can't see eye to eye anymore. It's a coach player thing that they just can't get past for some reason.
I always wondered if he gets along with Russell Wilson, like the whole.
I don't think that has anything to do with it.
I don't think that matters either.
There's offensive and defensive guys that played like Hall of Fame careers that hated each other. Like that. Has
yeah, that's true. It is like two separate teams.
It's definitely between Richard and Pete at the moment. And, you know, what I find fascinating about it from a psychological level is this is the epitome of Pete's philosophy coming back to bite him in the ass, really, you know, bite the hand that feeds
player
you, if you will. Yeah, he puts these guys so, you know, he gives them so much room and leeway, which is the right way to do it. I'm not saying that it's not. It's the absolute right way. Treat them like adults. But what happens when the adults have an actual differing opinion than you? You know, if two adults have differing opinions, you have to rectify that in some way. And right now, Richard has an opinion, Pete has an opinion, and it might all boil back to that Super Bowl loss and the 1 yard line and some of that and how he's dealt with it. And Richard's opinion is that kind of like the fan opinion. I feel like Richard is really aligned with the fan opinion on this one and says, why would we ever run the ball pass the ball at the 1 yard line again? We know how that works. It's just throw that play out. Just get rid of it, you know? And I feel like that's the fan opinion. That's Richard's opinion. And Pete has gone to great lengths to say that it's just circumstances. The play call was fine. It's just the outcome that was bad. You know, we've all heard that message. But this is two adults that have differing opinions. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's called reality. That's the adult world. And Pete says that they're adults, but then I think it's whack. I think it's totally whack for him to then act like he has authority over these people and what they can believe.
I mean, I think you're right on that. I mean, I like that last word you got in there.
All right. Let's get over to
23 minutes on Richard Sherman. I love it.
Come on, let me wrap this up.
So, your favorite Seahawks player is Richard Sherman. All right, let's.
Okay, no, it's going to be 21-4.
All right, it's Krusty. You started to talk about your favorite player, and you started talking about Richard Sherman. So, what do we got?
No. So,
Steve Largent.
No. I have a lot of players that are very close for me in this run. The hit that Cam Chancellor put on Demaryius Thomas in the Super Bowl, that one hit alone almost makes him my favorite player, even if he had never played another down. It was like the greatest hit I've ever seen in my life.
That was pretty incredible.
Because of what it meant. But, and I will always, our good friend, who we're buddies with, he worships Matt Hasselbeck, and I do too. I will always be a gigantic Matt Hasselbeck fan. I think he was a fantastic Seahawk, a really good community, great guy. They were really good with him for the first time. Like, we'd never been good consistently before him. And they won multiple division championships, went to one Super Bowl. I mean, I really had a lot of respect for Matt Hasselbeck. But my favorite player of all time is not only who I think is the best Seahawk of all time, I don't even think it's close. And I think he might be the best player in the history of the NFL, in my opinion. And that's Walter Jones. Walter Jones was the left tackle. Walter Jones had 180 games in the NFL, and he started in 180 of them. He also gave up the fewest sacks of anyone with that career length of career ever. And the crazy thing about Walter Jones, a fact that no one knows, is he was allergic to pain medicine. So he couldn't ever take any, like, you know when they say, like, oh, you go in and get the shot and come back out? Uh-huh. He couldn't take that. And, in fact, he couldn't take ibuprofen.
Holy crap.
Walter Jones was the toughest, best player ever, dude. And he's the best Seahawk of all time. It's not even close.
It's probably true, yeah.
Hall of Famer, Pro Bowler, so many times over.
He was a first ballot Hall of Famer.
He was the best left tackle in football every single year he was in football, period.
Like, Presti, I got to ask you real quickly. Side note, what position did you play in high school?
Offensive line and defensive line.
Left tackle.
Yeah. I was a guard. I was left guard. But I love,
you know, that real exciting position of left tackle that all the fans are clamoring for.
Yeah. Walter Jones.
I'm not going to shit on Walter Jones. That'd be the
worst. No,
Walter
Jones was so.
But it's a hilarious pick in the scheme of things.
I mean, that's like, I thought you were going to.
But it's the truth.
I thought you were going to say Steve Largent, to be honest. I mean,
no way.
Yeah.
Because that whole team, that team in those years with Sean Alexander and Matt Hasselbeck. That team, that offense was so dominant, and it was Walter Jones. That left side, when we had Steve Hutchinson with him, they were even more amazing. But even without Hutchinson, that left side, I mean, you just erased anyone that was over there. I don't care.
Did we have John L. Williams at that time? I feel like we had John L.
Williams was way before.
Oh, he was before? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like 90s, right?
Because Walter Jones was with Hasselbeck for the most part.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and he was so good, dude. Do
you feel like that was the reason why Hasselbeck was so good?
Best player in the NFL every year.
At his position. What's that?
I said, do you feel like? Do you feel that Hasselbeck had so much success because of his line? Because of Walter Jones on his blind side.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he had a wonderful offensive line, Hasselbeck did. I think he was a really smart player.
Alexander that benefited the most, though, right?
Sean Alexander left dive behind Hutch and Walt was, like, unstoppable. It was 4 yards every single time you did it, period or more. Like, it was just
definitely unstopped. Wasn't the year that Chisler drafted Sean Alexander first pick. That was a bad year for him.
That was after the big payment. Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of changed things, didn't it?
Yeah. So he's nice. You know, and yeah.
Who's your flashy? Who else is in your pantheon then? You've got Walter Jones, and you said there was some other names there.
I would say Walter Jones. I would say I was a huge Bobby Engram fan. Always loved Bobby Engram. Just emotionally was big for me. Again with that Hasselbeck team. But in the more modern, I would say Cam. I love Max Strong. Big Max Strong fan. And I always just love fullbacks. I love Rob as well. Real Rob Report is the man.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. So I love fullbacks always. You know, it's that mentality. I like the tough guys. I love Bobby Wagner for sure. I liked Tui Asisopo. I just, linebackers, linemen, you know. Mebane, I think, was amazing. There's too many. But Walter Jones for me is like, Walter Jones is like a million places higher than the second place guy, in my opinion. But
it's crazy that it wouldn't be Russell.
My favorite current Seahawk is Cam Chancellor.
Isn't it nuts that it's not Russell for I think a lot of Seahawk fans. I think that's a pretty unique characteristic. I mean, we have to think about who got us the Super Bowl, right? Who actually got us the Super Bowl? And I'd put Pete Carroll up there as like one of the main reasons we got to the Super Bowl. And then you'd have to put, or, you know, that we won the Super Bowl. Your Cam Chancellor hit is incredible. Set the tone. Like, so from that hit on, we knew it was our game. That's pretty much what I felt like.
Yeah, I think that is a hit that won a Super Bowl championship.
We just like, oh, well, they can't compete with us. We just can just destroy them. Yeah.
And the rest of the game, all those guys were alligator arming balls and ducking out of routes and just watching where Cam was so they end up in the hospital.
That's going to be another episode.
I think you have to put Russ in there in the pantheon just for getting us the win.
He should be.
Getting us the win. Super Bowl win.
Here's the one game that I think maybe keeps Russ out from a lot of, or why maybe he's not more of a like legend. I mean, he's a legend. He's been amazing. The magical moments he's done. What game was it? Green Bay. No, but okay. So that NFC Championship Green Bay game, where that's actually the game I was going to bring up. I think that game hurt him because he was dog manure. Like 3/4 of that game, we were going to lose that game because of Russ.
There were four interceptions in the NFC Championship game. Well, let's just say Jermaine Kearse caused 4 interceptions.
Yeah, I was going to say a couple of more tip. They didn't catch him, but I know what you're
still,
saying.
Still, but he was not on his game. Like, he was there playing been, terrible.
If it wouldn't have been the 4 games before that he won on the final drive, then, you know, sure, you'd have to fault him. But he got 5 wins in a row or something. I mean, it was just insane what he was pulling off that year.
He's legendary. There's no question. Yeah.
The fourth quarter I think it's drives like, is just an insane stat.
I can just
also
never
just
pick
his willingness to win.
Yeah.
The fact that he can go up and down the sideline and get everybody to rally behind him is an incredible feat.
Yeah. A football team needs a leader and... I mean, really, who's going to do it? I always feel like the leader of any team is kind of like the guy that really people like but don't like. Do you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like you never want to be the guy that has to try to pump everybody up and be in charge all the time. And he like admirably wears that on his shoulders all the time. And he's like built for that role. And I know that it is kind of like it's cliche to like him, but I really think that what he's proven in what, 4 years, 5 years of playing is something spectacular. I mean, I loved him. Like when he first got drafted, I was like, this is, I don't know. I thought that was a bad move. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. We're going to get this short guy. That's all I was thinking too. I thought he was short and I was like, oh God. And who was the guy that we had that was short before him? It was,
Kitna.
Wallace.
Yeah,
Seneca Wallace.
And I was like, this guy, there's no way he's going to make this. And then we just get another guy, and I was like, but man, that season, it was just kind of like crazy because I was kind of watching it from afar. I wasn't really paying attention too much that season. And this is the year that they lost to Atlanta, I believe, right?
Right, Ryan, 2012.
Yeah, Ryan Leaf had that amazing last comeback.
Matt Ryan.
And I saw this.
Dude, that game was so heartbreaking.
It was. But I saw, like throughout that season, I was like, who's this Russell Wilson? Because I wasn't even paying attention because the Hawks been so bad for many years. And I know that they started to get their defense together. And I saw this article where he was like, I want to be a legend. I don't want to just be a good quarterback. And I was like, wait a minute. Who is this guy playing in Seattle? I've never heard
rookie
of him saying shit like
talking
that.
Talking like that, yeah.
Talking like that. And I was like, whoa. And then I started seeing him in press conferences. I was like, this guy is serious. And it got me fired up.
His work
did you guys watch his back in that rookie year? You know how John Gruden does the quarterback camp thing on ESPN?
Yes, I love that. Yeah,
his sold me. Like his quarterback camp thing. You could tell that you're like, because he remembered John Gruden looked across the table and he said, "You're mentally stronger than everybody else, aren't you?" And he was like, "Yes, sir. I like to think I am, sir." And I was like,
"Yeah." He kept calling him sir, and he had his little.
I was like, "This kid's gonna be good. This kid's."
He had his little
really
notebook
good.
Out, and he was like taking notes the whole time. I was like, "All right, this guy's serious. He's not just like, okay,
was
whatever.
No
I'm gonna be great."
Yeah.
No, he was. There's no
honestly,
doubt why he's good. He's
I don't
got talent.
I've ever met
there.
Anybody like him. Have you ever met anybody in your real life that works as hard as he does?
Well, you know me, so I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say only Krusty. No,
I'm serious.
He's so disciplined, dude. And I think that's right. That's the driving reason why people sometimes have a problem with him.
Exactly.
He's so disciplined, it seems like it can't be real because all of us are so much lazier than that. And we're all like, yeah, right. Nobody can really, be that disciplined of a mentally strong guy, but he just really is.
I think his image too sometimes, I have to admit, all the press conferences, whenever he's on now, I just skip it. It's he says the same thing over and over. He's a robot.
But you want that from your quarterback.
I don't fault him for it because he's just he's doing a job.
I don't want Jay Cutler calling out his own offensive line and press conferences and stuff.
He says everything professional.
I'm fine with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's switch gears. Let's downshift actually into the Mariners. They just got blown out tonight.
Some interesting
I don't even know.
Stuff happening.
Yeah. I mean, they got blown out tonight. It was pretty much, I've been just kind of going in and out. But then I also saw, what's his name, got hurt. Ingram, who's the guy that, Haniger
Mitch,
got hurt tonight.
Mitch Haniger. Haniger.
Yeah.
Went out in the third inning. Looks like I think they said a hip.
Wrist?
A hip injury?
Oh, I thought it was his left wrist or something.
No, I think he dislocated his hip or something.
Man, we really fact-checked this one hard before we went in this.
So wait, wasn't Felix on the mound too? So he got blown
up? Yeah, Felix went out. Man, Felix got shelled.
He got rocked. So, and then not only all of that, but then just earlier in the week, they had a win, but then they dropped three before that. So it's been a rough week. But also they put Martin, who's been just not able to hit anything. My 8-year-old daughter is batting a better average than Martin has been. But he is one of the best defensive outfielders in baseball. I mean, he's an incredible defensive outfielder.
And he has a big salary.
And I was a little bit surprised to see that, but they designated him for the minors. Now he could not clear. I haven't seen if he cleared waivers and they got him or what, but That's a pretty shocking thing, I think, for what they pay him and for how good he is defensively. For them to designate him down, that's surprising to me.
I had no idea that other people could take him.
I think that they get a chance to offer. The Mariners get a chance to counteroffer and stuff, I think, but I'm not sure exactly how that works.
Huh. Yeah, I thought it was one of those temporary demotions that they do that wouldn't really come.
Well, you know, it depends on how many of those you've had and like how far you're in your career you are. Like, there's limited amounts of that stuff. So I'm pretty sure that he could get picked by someone else if they wanted. Wow. But again, I listened to an interview with one of the Mariners hitting coaches, and they just said that he's just kind of all over the place right now. Like, he's choking up and sliding down on the bat like every other at bat, and like swinging different and like changing his. He's just kind of all a hot mess right now, just trying to fix it.
If Haniger's hurt, though, would they possibly call him back up for any reason? I mean, I don't think they play the same position, but
not to replace any hitting. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that's what I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
I'm really into this, into Motter right now. I mean, he kind of was on fire for about a week there. That was pretty exciting with, you know, Cruz and Cano still doing well. But, you know, that's just not enough. And then
Haniger still was losing. Blowing it up, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like there's some exciting bats in the lineup right now still. But it's, as usual, the Mariners have no bullpen, so I don't know. I'll be honest. I was watching a lot, and then as soon as they just started losing again, it's tough. I mean, plus living on the East Coast, it's not easy to watch Mariners games. I mean,
yeah, it's gonna be hard. They
start so late. I mean, they just start at like 10, and I'm just blown out by like 11, 12. Anyway, I'm old now, so I just fall asleep, wake up, and then check out the score the next day.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I'm loving what I'm seeing from Paxton. Yeah.
What's Paxton?
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, he's awesome. He's the best thing they got going right now. I think the biggest concern is just that their offense has been on fire, but they haven't been able to turn it into wins, you know? Just like you said, the pitching staff just can't hold it together. And the interesting thing will be to see if they can turn that around. You would think that they would, but who knows? I think, what do you guys think? Let's do I think there's so many games in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I was going to say, baseball season is so long.
It's silly to try to predict, like, a final record exactly. But let's take it right now, since we just came off the prediction episode for the NFL. What's your prediction for what happened? What kind of season is this? Where does it end?
All right, well, I'll start. I think that by All-Star break, they're going to be still hovering maybe just below 500. And that's actually just being, like, really, like, optimistic as it's looking right now. But I do think they're going to, like, figure it out. I mean, these things take a long time. I mean, a baseball season is so long. It's so many ups and downs. I mean, even by August, even by September, you have no idea what could happen. I mean, these guys can get hot in September and then make a run for the playoffs. But if they can stay just below 500 by All-Star break, I do think that they're going to have a chance to make the playoffs. And I think they're going to screech on in. But, I mean, luckily, I mean, it seems like the AL West isn't as good as it was last year right now. Rangers kind of struggling a little bit. I don't even know. From year to year, baseball is just kind of a crapshoot. It's not like basketball. Football is even a little bit more consistent in a way than baseball. It's just, who knows what can happen. I mean, these guys, it's such a, baseball to me, the sport is like gambling a little bit. You know, some years these guys can play great. The team just plays together. There's so many parts to it, and it's such a mental game and just a strain on your brain, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, when you say that, it makes me think of my golf game and how I can't even play 18 holes. I'm bored. I'm bored after 9. To think of playing 160 games, just I could get through 2, maybe. Like, if I were a player, before I'd just be like, oh yeah, my swing's out of whack. Oh, I better fix it. And then I start going down that path, and then I'm fixing my swing. I'm fixing this. I'm just constantly adjusting, never feeling comfortable. God, I can't even imagine.
Awesome.
What do you think?
Okay, so I think that I think the offense stays really consistently good, and I think that some of these guys that we're seeing right now that have been surprising will drop back quite a bit. But I think you've got that core of proven guys with Cano and Cruz and Seager that will stay solid enough to keep the offense going. But I think they're going to end up like third in the division and miss the playoffs again. And I don't think it'll really be... It won't be as exciting as it was last year. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's what you've been saying the whole time, that they're just going to blow it anyway, so...
I just
shocking pat, opinions just, from just, Krusty.
Just yeah. obvious patterns. Obvious patterns.
Obvious opinions from Krusty.
I want to do a little side note real quick back on the whole baseball thing is that I've been very lucky playing music for the last, 10-12 years on tour and stuff, and I've actually got to meet some professional athletes on tour, and last summer I hung out with Barry Zito, and
cool.
As you know, he was a he was a San Francisco pitcher, and he was MVP, I believe, in one World Series that they won, right? Am I tripping?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I'm such a huge fan of baseball, and I was like, man, I just gotta tell you, like, what's it like being a professional baseball player? And he was saying that he hated it. He was very much like, I just want to be a musician. I want to do what you do. And I was like, you don't want to do this. I mean, I don't make the money you make. But he was saying, dude, do you know how... I was like, I got to go on tour all the time. He's like, do you know how hard it is? And he's a pitcher. They go out, what, every 7 days, 6 days?
Five.
He's like, do you know how hard it is to play a baseball game at the professional level every five games and to do this year in, year out, and that's what you get paid to do, and that's how you keep your salary up.
Yeah.
Basically, he was saying, like, being a professional baseball player is nothing like anybody thinks. I could see it on his face that he was just like, this is just so hard. He was trying to be a singer-songwriter right now. He was in Nashville. He's playing, I believe, AAA baseball still. He's just still playing, but...
Crazy.
He was talking about how hard it is, and then now when I watch it, I always reflect on that conversation I have with him, because I always watch it and I think, man, these guys got the best jobs in the world. I mean, they get to play baseball every night, and it does sound miserable. I mean, you got to go out there and compete. So, you know, I'm watching these guys every night, the Mariners, and going, man, they really are struggling, but it is tough. I mean, I can't believe that that's all they do. And they don't even just play for a season. They play year round now.
Yeah, it's such a grind. Day after day, yeah.
Yeah.
So, adult life is pretty much a big wet blanket no matter what you do.
Yeah, exactly. I was telling him how I was like, man, it's tough doing this every day. And he's like, you telling me, man. I was like, all right, well. I mean, I just thought it was interesting to hear that.
For sure.
I've also hung out with Mark Sanchez, by the way, a few times, and I'm not going to say that he's the best Jets quarterback of all time. That's not my favorite.
He's not the best anybody's quarterback of all time. But
he's a cool guy, though. I gotta say, he's a great dude. But
I'm sure. Anyway, that's cool. I'm gonna do a quick first time of a very quick Krusty's beer reviews. As you guys know, and most anyone who knows me through Zillionaire or whatever, I'm pretty passionate beer lover. I brew my own beer and just really enjoy the craft beer movement. We're in, like, maybe the greatest time in the history of America for beer right now. It's so amazing. And I just want to really quick say, I live in Yakima, which is where the vast majority of hops for the country's beer industry has grown. And we finally have had some really nice breweries open here in Yakima. I encourage anyone who gets a chance to come to Yakima, Washington, and check out Bale Breaker Brewery, which is a really cool brewery in a hop field. Come in the fall when they're harvesting the hops, and you can literally sit out and drink a beautiful IPA while watching them harvest the hops, and the whole world just smells like you're just crushing a hop all over your face, and it's just the greatest thing ever.
Dude, we get that crushing an IPA
right now.
This is a free commercial for Bale Breaker.
Let's break that down three ways. Whatever sponsorship money Krusty's getting for this, whatever he's pocketing, I think it's three. Break it down three ways.
But on top of my enjoyment of that brewery and how cool of a location they have and everything, I want to just say that in my opinion, the best brewery in America has opened in Seattle, Washington. And it's a crime if anyone who loves beer hasn't gone there or doesn't go there. I could get some money from this guy maybe actually, but
is this Holy Mountain?
It's called Holy Mountain Brewing Company.
Nice.
They've been open for just over 2 years. that if you like sour beer, which have you guys ever had sour beer? Oh,
I don't like sour beer.
I brought Chisler sour beer.
Holy Mountain sour beer. It was incredible.
Holy Mountain. And it is a weird experience if you're not into it or haven't drank it before. It's a very different type of beer. But they do the best I've ever had. And not just that, they do all kinds of different styles of beer. I really recommend it. Love it. And if you go there, get a hold of Krusty and tell me, and I'll meet you there.
Have you heard this story, right, Solo? This story is crazy. So Krusty comes over to my house with his wife one weekend, and they're going to spend the night, and we're going to all, just hang out for a few days and go to a beer fest and whatnot. Krusty comes to my house. He brings in a big bottle of the sour style beer that I've never had before from Holy Mountain. And he cracks it. He pours me a glass. I taste it. And I'm like, this is incredible. This is like a whiskey sour and a beer somehow mixed or something.
Yes.
And it's just totally a bizarre flavor. It doesn't really taste like traditional beer. And he goes, oh, well, I'm so glad that you said that. I'm so glad that you like it, because I have a whole nother bottle in the car, but I didn't want to bring it in if you weren't going to really appreciate it. So he, like, tested me on it with the first bottle.
I wasn't going to waste beer.
He wasn't going to waste his beer. That's the kind of shiesty move he pulls on his good friend who he's, like, putting him up for the weekend. And then he tries to drive away in his car, breaks down a half a block from my house, and guess what? I got Krusty and Malia for another day, you know.
Just when, and then you went to go pick him up, and you went to the mechanic, and he couldn't find his debit card. I've heard all these stories.
Oh, that is a very normal Krusty story. There's no question about that.
I have to say, my favorite IPAs are Goose Island and yeah, well, I say Goose Island, and what's the other
one? Goose Island out of Chicago. Goose Island's out of Chicago. And interestingly enough,
Bell's, Goose Island, I love Bell's IPA.
Bell's out of Michigan. Yeah, Bell's.
Kalamazoo.
Kalamazoo, Michigan. Bell's makes a beer called Two Hearted Ale that is amazing.
Strong.
Such a good beer.
I played at Bell's Brewery last summer, which is random, and I didn't realize it until we got there that I was like, oh, this is the actual Bell's Brewery. This is the Bell's. And of course, they had all of that on tap, all of it. And to say the least, I partook.
I enjoyed it.
That's awesome.
I half enjoyed all of those beers.
Well, that kind of makes me think of something. Do you guys know your Burning Man history?
Definitely.
You know Burning Man, I've never gone. Crazy festival in the desert?
No, I mean, I've seen a little bit about it, but I don't educate me. I don't know anything about Burning
Man. Oh, well, okay, Burning Man. Well, wait, I'll give you a little history lesson on it, okay? Way back in the day, you had Burning Hominid. That was the first festival. Then you fast forward, it was followed by Burning Homo Erectus. Then, of course, there was maybe 10,000 years ago, it was burning Neanderthals, which was eerily too white. I felt like it was kind of hard to enjoy. It was too hard to enjoy the music with all the questions of why was it so white in here swirling in my head, you know?
What was the music? What was that, like Crosby, Stills, and Nash? Or?
Yeah. Oh, my God. No, it was just some guy with some rocks banging on the rocks and whacking a stick against a tree. It was Burning Neanderthals, man.
Oh, it wasn't music. Oh, it was that was the last episode. There. My bad.
And then, of course, if you think about it, it wasn't really that long ago that Burning Chimpanzee was deemed inhumane. Yeah. Thank God.
He's just going crazy.
I think that actually brings it back to the Richard Sherman. Way to bring it full circle.
Oh, yeah. I love that Richard Sherman is going to prove us all wrong at some point in the next 2 years.
I hope so, too.
Me, too.
He's going to show that being outspoken and all that is just what we need in this crazy ass time. We need somebody with a head on their shoulders and a crazy attitude to kind of steer us out of this crazy.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go right back to my home opener prediction against the 49ers in week two. When they win 48-0 against the 49ers, as I predicted, it will be Richard Sherman with two pick six touchdowns.
Oh, love it.
To just tell the...
What was that? You just dropped out.
Sorry. Nah, I unplugged my mic. So it'll be two pick six touchdowns to seal up the end of the first quarter. Two pick six touchdowns in the first quarter.
I think I need to be in the audience for that game.
We got to get tickets to something. Yep.
You guys have tickets?
No, we went last year together. We got to get some this year.
You know what? Looks like my fall might be a little open.
I'm sure it'll be impossible to get that Falcons Monday night game, but I will move heaven and earth to go to that game if we can get that game.
All right.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to fly back this fall at one point, and so we can maybe watch a game together and then also do a live podcast in person.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Bomb at the game. No, that's crazy.
And maybe we'll even rent, like, we'll tailgate and we'll do it outside.
Tell me the game and I'll get the tickets.
Okay, all right, but our listeners don't want to listen to this at all.
Yeah. What listeners?
Our thousands of listeners. And we still
a couple.
We still hit like almost 50 minutes, guys. Let's nice work.
Let's wrap this up, guys.
A third one. Yeah, really nice work.
Nice. We'll continue this on the next one. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Take it easy.
Live free.
All right.
Peace.